Since 1986, Rich Green Lawns has been the leading lawn fertilization company of the Jersey Shore, providing lawn fertilization, bed weed control, tick and mosquito control, as well as tree and shrub programs. Mention this ad and save 50% off your first lawn application. Call or text us today at 732-370-5963. 732-370-5963 or richgreenlawns.com.
Welcome to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. Hook, Line, and Splitter is presented by NJR Home Services. And now, here's your host, Greg Giamborisi.
We finally reached the end of 2022. Good day, everybody. I'm Greg Giamborisi. Welcome to Hook, Line, and Splitter, episode 53, our best of Hook, Line, and Splitter from the year 2022. So what we're going to do today is we're going to go back, and we got clips from six different interviews that we did this year, and all with Blue Claws players, and we just took some fun stuff, and I think you're going to like it, and we put them together. So we'll get to that in just a few moments. Wanted to thank everybody for listening to us this year. It was a lot of fun doing these episodes, and we're not stopping. We're getting ready for 2023. New Year's Day is Sunday, and that is 100 nights, days, until opening night, 2023, April the 11th at Shoretown Ballpark. Blue Claws will be home to kick off their 22nd season at now Shoretown Ballpark in Lakewood at the Jersey Shore. So we can't wait for that. And I'll give you a few ticket options and stuff at the end, but we don't want to spend too much time here at the beginning, and we'll get you right into these clips. So we pulled six, and here are the players that we're gonna hear from. Baron Radcliffe, who talked about being locked in at the plate near the end of the year and what he learned from his dad that helped jumpstart his season in July. Carlos De La Cruz had a great year. He began the year inactive with the Blue Claws on the temporary inactive list, got bumped up to the active roster about 2 weeks into the season, played great, got himself promoted, and then went to the Arizona Fall League where he played extremely well. Down there, we talked to him about how he ended up signing with the Phillies. He was a non-drafted high school signee. His background in baseball, he's 6'8". Talk about that, how everybody wanted to play basketball, but he stuck with baseball. We talked to Andrew Baker, hard-throwing right-handed reliever. Talked about the draft process for him, pitching in Cape Cod and some more with Andrew. Jason Ruffcorn, whose father played in the big leagues for the White Sox and the Phillies, what he learned from his dad, and then how they've bonded over pickleball in over the last few years. We talk about Mick Abel, which he talks about following Max Scherzer, who he really enjoyed watching, and of course now Scherzer with the Mets, and who knows, maybe in the next couple of years Mick will get to face off against Max Scherzer. You never know. And also Mick's love of collecting baseball cards, which he also got from his dad. And then Andrew Schultz, who was drafted in 2019 out of Tennessee, and he had a really good year coming back from Tommy John surgery, which he had at the end of 2020, which was the COVID year. He got hurt during a throwing session and then had Tommy John, missed all of 2021, came back strong in 2022, and ended up finishing the season in Reading. And he is certainly, along with Andrew Baker, one of a couple of right-handed, hard-throwing relievers that the Phillies have that will be in the upper minors at the beginning of the season with their eye on the big leagues, and certainly would expect to see Andrew in big league camp coming up in a couple of months. So we'll get into those clips here coming up in a little bit, but we wanted to thank everybody for joining us this year on Hook, Line, and Splitter, and hope you enjoy this episode, our best of 2022. Before we get to the interviews, Lightstar Energy Group is a leading energy brokerage firm headquartered in New Jersey. Our goal is to provide clients with premium energy management services to lower electricity and natural gas costs and to provide a long-term energy management strategy. We pride ourselves on bringing each and every individual business the same benefits of deregulation enjoyed by universities, municipalities, and all high-volume energy users. Tailored products and contracts, lower costs, personal attention, and outstanding service. 732-722-5880 to learn more about Lightstar Energy Group today. So we'll start with Baron Radcliffe, who was drafted in 2020 out of Georgia Tech and had a solid year with the Blue Claws. Maybe he got off to a bit of a slow start, but by the end of the year, he was playing as well as anybody, not just with the Blue Claws, but in the South Atlantic League and in the Philly system. Finished really well, and he'll be one to look out for in Reading at the beginning of the year. So we start with him talking about being locked in at the plate and his approach, and as we said before, what he learned from his dad when he went down back to Georgia, went home for a few days during the All-Star break, and that certainly helped jumpstart his season. So we start this off, our best of 2022, with Baron Radcliffe.
You know, I'm in the box, confident, feel good, having success lately. And so that just kind of in turn translates into how I feel in the box and seeing it well, putting a good swing on it. So
what have you been working on with Ari and with Keith over the last few months?
I mean, Ari kind of, you know, he got sick and was out for a while. And there was a point where Chris Heinz was in town. And we just kind of came to a conclusion that, you know, because he started by telling me some things that he had talked to Derek Hall about that helped him stay closed. And then I remembered, well, there's a certain thing I did in college that helped me stay closed. Because the main thing for me was just making sure I'm not pulling off the ball. And so I got to a point where I looked at what I did in college, and that's all that happened. Like, I just went back to that and went home, worked on it with my dad during the All-Star break, came back, and everything fell into place.
So what did how was it to work with your dad? You know, you work with the Phillies coaches, obviously, all year, but, you know, you've worked with your dad probably your whole life. So what was that like for you at that time of the year?
Huge, man. It's a comfort thing for me. And so getting to go home and hit with him and regain kind of that comfort level, kind of like recharge and reset for me, was really big at that moment, especially struggling leading up to that point. Just kind of like a reset button for me. So being at home just kind of gave me that, all right, we can flush whatever happened before the All-Star break, and, you know, I can be ready to go for second half.
You know, big lefty slugger, you think, you know, you pull a lot, obviously, but a couple of the home runs this week have gone opposite field. He went into the fan zone there in left center, but you can, you know, you try to drive the ball the other way if that's the pitch that's given to you.
Yeah, for sure. One thing my dad taught me my whole life is hit the ball where it's pitched. So if it's outside, hit it to left. If it's inside, pull it. You know, really it's just – making sure I'm putting a good swing on it. I'm staying back on off-speed pitches. And for the most part, pitches go outside on me anyway. So it's easy for me to just stay back and hit it, you know, where it's headed.
The one on Friday into the fan zone, the Chick-fil-A fan zone in Lakewood, did you think that was going to get up? I mean, you only have to clear 8 foot for a home run, but did you think it was going to get over all 20 feet? That's a shot.
I didn't know. I had no idea. The spot that I hit it was kind of blended in with the scoreboard, so I couldn't really see the ball after a certain point. I knew that it was going to be a home run. The wind was blowing out the left, so I knew I had hit it well, and the wind was blowing out. But I assumed it would just hit off that brick wall, but apparently all my teammates said it just kept going as it cleared the ball.
Yeah. I don't remember another – I've been here for a few years. I don't remember another lefty hitting out there.
Yeah. I've done it at BP a couple of times, but – being able to do it in a game is crazy. And I got some free Chick-fil-A for it, so that was good.
There you go. When you came home that one, you know, you guys were down 7-0 in the game. The second you hit one to make it 7-1, 7-2, then you hit the three-run home run, the second one into the fan zone, made it 7-5. And I don't think I've seen you as pumped up, as emotional when you came home for that one. You were right back in the ballgame at that point, obviously in the seventh inning there. What were those emotions like for you when you came home with that second homer?
I could just remember the times when I was struggling earlier in the season that I had opportunities like that to give us a chance to win or give us a chance to be back in the game and didn't succeed in those positions. So for me, it was just kind of like after building up off good weeks and then being able to do that and try to help us get back in the game, it just fired me up because I know that, you know, there's – been chances that I had to do that in the season where I didn't come through. And so when I did, it was like, all right, like just feels good to be able to put us, because I mean, we didn't even really have too many hits at that point. So being able to do that was just kind of like a, all right, we're back in the game. I'm feeling good. I'm helping us to have a chance to win. And so it fired me up.
The other night on Tuesday in Hudson Valley, I mean, they were no doubters. I know you've hit a few of them this year and in your career. What's it like, you know, as a big slugger, you know, you're going up there, you want to hit a home run if you can. You're not necessarily trying to hit a home run, but you want to hit a home run. And then when you connect it and you know it's gone, that's like the pinnacle. What's that feeling like for a hitter?
It's pretty nice, man. It's I always catch stuff from my friends and my teammates just because they want to see me pimp home runs a little more than that, because I'm used to just hitting the ball and just running. But it's gotten to a point now, especially the second one, like, it felt so good, especially on the second one after I've already hit one in the trees. Then I hit another one off the bat, and my immediate feeling is like, let's go. Like, I feel really good. I feel confident. And to be able to hit the ball where I hit it dead center and still know that it's gone, it's a pretty nice feeling for sure.
You know, the other thing that stands out when you look at your numbers, not just this year, last year too, you know, you take a lot of walks, and obviously, you know, with your power, you know, they're going to be careful with you, but you know, you don't chase a lot. You know, has that always been a part of your game?
Yeah, I think so. And that's kind of just something going forward for me is from a maturation standpoint, is just I struck out a lot this year early on when I was struggling, just trying to kind of get out of the slump. But it's aggravating for me looking back because I swung at a lot of pitches that I never swing at. And so it's always been in my game. Even in college, I was able to walk a lot. And for the most part, it's just because pitchers try to throw around me at every level that I've been in. And so I know once I kind of keep that in my mind and understand what pitchers are trying to do, and they're probably going to go soft, down and away, things like that. It's just easy for me to, you know, take those pitches or whatever. And I also have a good eye. So I can be patient and know that, you know, I have to get a good pitch to get a swing off, or else I'm not swinging.
Our next player that we hear from is Carlos De La Cruz, who was a non-drafted free agent signed by the Phillies at the end of the 2017 season, and he ended up playing with the Blue Claws in 2019 when they were in low a little bit at the end of the 2021 season in high A, and then the bulk of 2022 in high A before a well-earned late-season promotion to double A Reading. Carlos De La Cruz.
Week-long of negotiations and process and seeing what was going to happen. But glad I got the offer, because I was not going to reject that offer. I was trying to get in the system and trying to play pro ball.
So you've been an outfielder until this year, and you still play mostly in the outfield, but you played a little bit at first base. Had you ever picked up a first baseman before, or had you always been in the outfield?
Yeah, I have. I was an infielder years ago until I got too tall, so I had to move to outfield. But going back to it, it was weird. It was a weird sensation because I hadn't been there yet, so it was trying to get back into the rhythm of being an infielder again and just learning everything that I had to learn in the process.
Well, I guess you're going to play, I don't know, well, Rickson went on the IL yesterday. Hopefully he's not out too long, but I guess you might be back playing a little more first base if he's not healthy.
Yeah, that'll probably happen. That'll probably happen soon.
So – obviously, the first thing that stands out when you look at you on the field or look on the roster sheet, you know, 6'8", and you know we talked about this before, but you know, one of the first questions that people I'm sure have asked you is, did you ever play basketball? But you were always a baseball guy.
I was always a baseball player. Basketball was like more of a hobby. In school, coaches did try to recruit me to play basketball. Didn't work out. Just into the baseball side, and thank God I have.
Where'd you get the love of baseball? From your family?
My family. Dad was a pro ball player, but family mostly.
When was the first time you picked up a glove?
Early age.
Two or three or four, yeah.
Yeah, like 4 or 5.
So how tall were you when you were a freshman in high school?
Freshman in high school, I was 6'4", 6'5".
So you still tacked on a few more inches throughout high school, yeah.
Yeah, throughout high school, I got taller. And then which I'm pretty happy about.
It's funny though when you hit a home run and you round the bases and you high five Keith and you got a foot on him for 13, maybe 14 inches.
I try not to stand so much next to him so he won't look too short.
you try to squat down a little bit when you high five him.
Gotta show him some love.
So you went to George Washington High School. They have a pretty lengthy history of alums. Manny Ramirez, among others, played there. People in music and politics. What was your baseball career like in high school? What do you remember most about it?
How much fun we had. High school baseball was so fun. This year reminds me more of like my high school years because I'm having fun just playing out there, worrying about just playing baseball, nothing much. Pretty fun. Pretty group of guys I had. Wouldn't change that experience for anything.
All right, so you mentioned and Rod Carew, by the way, played there too. So did they talk about that a lot? You have Rod Carew is a Hall of Famer.
He's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Have you ever met him?
Manny, no, I haven't.
Peru?
Not either.
No, okay. But do they talk about that in high school? Like, hey, you're sharing the same field? You're sharing the same?
They mentioned Peru a little bit, but not as much as Manny. Since we're, like, in the Hispanic, like, more of a side of town, that's the mostly name you're going to get, the big name you're going to get from that.
And you were a Red Sox fan, right, growing up?
Yes, sir.
In New York. How'd that happen?
It's surprising. There are a lot of Boston fans in New York, more than people actually know. So,
who were your favorite players growing up?
Oh, come on, Manny.
Manny, yeah.
Sure. Poppy's another one.
Did you watch his Hall of Fame? Did you get to catch any of his Hall of Fame?
I couldn't.
I mean, yeah, we had the game, but you got to watch it after the fact. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I have to.
So you mentioned that, you know, playing this year, you know, a lot of fun, like high school. So I guess that kind of, you know, reflects there on Keith a little bit. What do you like about playing for him?
Oh,
playing
is one of the best things. He's pretty chill. He just lets you be you on the field. He's gonna like mentor, give you a couple of advices, couple of tips here and there, but Keith is like the man. He just lets you be you and play ball. That's all he wants, play ball.
So to back up for until last year, I know you started in Clearwater. You got up here by the end of the year. It seems like you've made a lot of strides. Even we talked about from 2019 when you were here, but what about from 2021? You know, how are you a better player this year than you were last year? And certainly the numbers say that you know, you're at a much different level right now.
This year is just trying to focus on what I can control. Go play ball. Whatever's going to happen is going to happen. It's supposed to happen. You're playing baseball. Not putting so much pressure on myself. It was another thing. Just relax. Do your thing. Trust yourself. Your abilities are there. Don't do too much and just play ball. I mean, that was one of the most, like, one of the main things I had in my mind, which is forget about everything, go out there and do your thing. Whatever happens, happens.
Did you find that you were pressing in years past and kind of more laid back mentally this year? Is that fair to say?
Yeah. I'm more, like mentally-wise, it's just, like, more laid back. Keeping my focus there. My focus can't go. Just the day-to-day grind. It's going to be there, but you still got to focus on that 7 o'clock. That's pretty much helped me a lot.
5 o'clock today, you got to play two.
Okay.
So, you know, at 6'8", you have, compared to a guy like Ethan was probably 6 foot two, Ethan Wilson. And your, you know, your strike zone is going to be a lot bigger.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot more ground to cover in that just because you're taller. Is that a challenge? You know, is that notable for you? Is that something that's been difficult? You know, at times, and you've kind of had to adjust to because you have to cover such a big zone.
It depends. It depends. Depending like who's back there, like they adjust their zones to me, but pretty much I don't let that affect me, to be honest. I'm just looking for a good pitch to hit, and if I get it, I get it. Try not to miss that pitch.
Anyway, you talked about Manny and David Ortiz before. Was there a guy that you kind of like to model your game after? Was it those two, or was it somebody else?
Honestly, I'd say nobody. I just try to create my own craft because I'm a big player. So I honestly, like, I can, like, Winfield, Carew, like, I can, like, similarize to them because I'm as tall as them, but not really. I just try to be myself.
Andrew Baker was drafted out of Chipola Junior College in Alabama, one of the top JUCO programs in America in 2021. Had a big year with the Blue Claws, picked it up about, let's say, beginning of June, and got promoted to Reading at the end of the year. Throws 100 miles an hour. We talk about his draft process, his velocity and pitching development, pitching in Cape Cod, and a bit more with Andrew Baker.
Obviously, you know, I talked to a bunch of teams, and I would say the Phillies weren't even on the top of my list. You know, I just didn't really talk that much. You know, I knew Mike. I'd seen him at some of our games. Mike Stauffer, he's the guy that signed me. You know, obviously saw him in the games, but never really, you know, pushed to get anything done. And, you know, obviously I was expecting to go on the second day. Didn't happen due to unfortunate events. And third day rolled around, and the Phillies were the first to call me. They said, hey, we can work this out. And I immediately was like, yeah, let's do it. And, you know, they took me in the 11th round, and I couldn't be happier about it, man.
Were you watching, following? How'd you find out?
Yeah, I was on Cape Cod at the Cape Cod Baseball League, and I was in the hotel with my parents, and we were watching it, and, you know, had it up on the iPad. So that was just me and my parents were watching it. So
did you find out when your name popped up, or did you find out when they called you before?
They called me before, and you just Mike basically called me and said, hey, I have the means to do this. Do I have your word? If I do, we're going to do this. I said, you have my word. And they put it in and said my name over the thing, man, and I was excited. So,
yeah, I mean, it's something that you've probably been dreaming about since you were what? 10 years old, 12 years old.
Yeah. I would say younger than that, six, seven. Yeah.
So when you went to Chipola the first time, obviously they're one of the top junior college programs in the country every year. You had two stints there. What coming out of high school, where else were you looking and how'd you end up there?
Yeah, you know, I had attention from some SEC schools coming out of high school, but they all knew I wasn't ready. I was young. You know, I was a late bloomer. So, I mean, I had a few mid-majors in Alabama, a few other junior colleges in Alabama, but I knew it was Chipola the entire time. I didn't really know anything. I didn't know how credible, how good their reputation was going there until I talked to Coach Jay and on the phone, and he told me about all of it. I didn't realize they had so many big leaguers. Bautista went there, Patrick Corbin, guys like that. You know, get there. I mean, obviously, man, I was 18 getting there, and it was, you know, I was nervous because we had a Georgia transfer that year, a Mississippi State transfer. We had a guy that was committed to Vanderbilt, and you know, you get there and it's kind of nerve wracking when I'm just from high school, you know, and I'm just, you know, new freshman, but it worked out perfectly fine, and I've settled in, and you know, that was the best decision of my life, was going to junior college. So
what did you learn there that helped you when you moved into Auburn?
I'd say a work ethic. I'd say I learned a good bit about you're gonna have to do your own routine, you know, because Coach Jay down there does a great job of making it like pro ball as much as he can, and that's why I think I fit into pro ball so well, and didn't really have much trouble, is because at Chipola he wanted us to, it to be like a pro ball environment, you know, and but learning the things I learned at Chipola really just propelled me to be successful at Auburn. Of course, COVID cut off the year at Auburn, but really just how to be a good teammate, work ethic, and having a routine. That was pretty much it.
So your season at Auburn, you probably only played about, what, 20 games maybe? If that.
I think we played 16 games, maybe, 16 non-conference.
Yeah, that was a shame. Obviously, you know, you're from Alabama. You grew up there. That would have been a fun year, you know, for you. Obviously, really good team and great program. How did you end up back at Chipola?
Well, I mean, it was a tough decision because I based it off of 16 games, and who knows what would have happened that year. But in my heart, I just felt like it was the best for me to come back where I was guaranteed innings. I was still developing as a player, and trying to figure out everything with the pitching. That was only year two of me from pitching. And I just knew it'd be better for me to go back to somewhere where I could, you know, if I struggled, I could still get innings. You know, at SEC school, it's hard to leave a guy out there because that's their job on the line too. And, you know, I understood that, but that's why I knew I had to leave, you know, and that was a good decision on my part. I got a lot of innings the next year, and I don't, you know, I enjoyed Butch and Auburn, but I just knew that was the best decision for me.
What was the experience like on the Keep? That's kind of one of those unique storybook baseball opportunities that not everybody gets.
Yeah, you know, I didn't really know about what it was. I was supposed to go the summer that COVID hit. I was supposed to go play for Brewster, and then, you know, it got canceled, and they brought it back, and my coach at Chipola said he was going to send me there, and it was great, man. I mean, I'm the host dad. I actually played with his son and traveled all. So he saw my name was added to the Hyannis roster, and he immediately was like, "Oh yeah, I know that kid." So he hosted me, actually, and then you know, I met my girlfriend up there too, and and so all in all, man, it was a great experience.
Tell the folks about what it's like. You know, you're living with host families, you're playing in these, you know, smaller fields, not the big professional stadiums, but it's really integrated into the Cape community. The support is unbelievable.
No, it was way more than I expected, to be honest with you. It was way more, and I told everybody, I said, I regret not going to the Cape every summer. Like, it was just awesome the way, just the towns and being on near the water, and that environment was just such a different. It was a different vibe for baseball, but it was so much fun to play there and be around all the fans. And I mean, they treated us like royalty too. So it was awesome.
So fast forward now, this year with the Phillies, you know, you're coming in there, you know, throwing 99, 100. You have Painter, you have Abel, you have McGarry here, you have Ben Brown here. How do you guys kind of feed off each other, you know, these big power right-handed arms?
Yeah, you know, obviously we got a bunch of guys with strong arms in this org. And, you know, when Griffin, Mick, and Painter and all of them were here, you know, we kind of just feed off of each other. We know that we don't try to throw hard. We go out there and want to throw strikes. And we talk every day about certain things. And, you know, it's a bright future for the Phillies, I think. Especially with Painter and how young he is and how well he's doing. I mean, and then Mick and Griff and me and all the other guys. So it's a bright future. And hopefully sooner or later, I'll see those guys again, but.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hopefully soon. When you were growing up, did you play any other sports besides baseball? When did you fall in love exclusively with baseball?
Yeah, football and basketball. Say football and basketball.
What position did you play in football?
I was in football as a wide receiver because I couldn't throw a football. And in basketball as a spot up 3-point shooter. like a three guard.
Did you have could you have played any of those in college or just and you picked baseball or were you just not as good as you were in baseball?
Well, we just kind of knew that baseball would be the thing I'd want to do at the next level. And football and basketball was just on the side just to do it.
Jason Ruffcorn went to the University of Oklahoma, and he finished up there, began his career at Texas A&M, plays pickleball with his dad, Scott, who pitched in the big leagues in the 90s with the White Sox and the Phillies for a few seasons. Talk about that and what Jason learned from his dad and some pickleball stuff too. Which was fun. It was just when the players got here, they filled out a little interest card, you know, what your favorite book is, movie, that sort of thing. And activity, non-baseball activity, he put pickleball, which is pretty cool. So we asked him about that, you know, like hearing from Jason Ruffcorn.
I mean, he's been probably my best coach growing up. Is like ever since I was started playing baseball, he was always one of the coaches and like always helped me out. But his biggest thing was having confidence in yourself. When he talks about his time in the big leagues and like his time in the minor leagues, like you're going to struggle, you're going to do well sometimes. And the biggest thing is to always maintain that confidence. Whether you're doing really well, you got to stay like level headed, or if you're doing poorly, you have to keep that confidence in yourself. You can't let the game beat you. You have to beat the game.
He played 1 year in 97 with the Phillies. So what was his reaction? I'm sure obviously he's over the moon when he got taken, but it probably was a little extra special when you got taken by the Phillies.
Yeah, when I got drafted, he was actually at work that day. And I get a call from the Phillies saying, we just drafted you. And then all of a sudden I get a call from him saying, really? You got to go copy my old team? And then whenever he got home from work, he came back and he ended up having two old Phillies jerseys from when he played. One said Ruffcorn on the back, and we both put those on and took a picture with it. And that was really a full circle moment for me.
That's really cool. So where were you watching the draft?
I was at home.
Were you just following the MLB.com feed there?
Yeah. I had it pulled up on the big screen, and I was just kind of like doing my own thing, playing a couple video games just to pass the time, and then I'll like just checking in on it off at every pick and whatnot, see if any of my friends could take it, as well as myself.
It's quite the long process and a long day there. I don't know. Had you had contact with the Phillies beforehand? You know, where did you think you might end up? Were they one of the teams that had spoken to you before?
Yeah, they were. I was really had no clue where I was going to end up because I was a fifth year reliever. I could have been like a little bit like a senior sign, save some money that they do, or I could have just been like picked normally. So I was like the entire day, I was just like, all right, when is it? Am I going to get a call? I had no clue what to expect.
What's that feeling like when you see your name on the screen? Or did you find out by seeing your name on the screen, or did you find out by the Phillies calling your agent or whatever?
I got a phone call, and that was how I found out. And that feeling was like one of the best, like finally seeing like all my years of work, all everything else, like being rewarded. Like I know the job's not done, sure, but just having that little milestone of being like, I got drafted and I'm actually going to go play pro ball. That was really awesome.
So you grew up in Texas. Besides your dad, and I know you never got to see him pitch, unfortunately, you're too young, but besides your dad, who is a guy that you like to, like kind of a baseball idol you like to watch growing up?
Oh, Pedro Martinez.
Yeah.
Seeing him throw and Max Scherzer are my two favorite, Max Scherzer and the current era. Pedro back then, growing up, I was watching him throw and everything like that. Just like seeing how both of them compete and everything else, that's just awesome to me.
Did you go to a lot of games when you were younger?
A couple of Rangers games, a couple of Astros games, but not a ton. For the most part, I'd always follow my dad around whenever he was coaching like high school kids or anything else, I'd always follow him and watch those games.
So when you guys got here, you filled out a survey, kind of like a get to know you type of survey, and you had the most unique answer, I think, for the favorite sport to play besides baseball question. You put pickleball. So, oh, yeah. Which is a great sport. It's a lot of fun. So tell us about your pickleball background.
So it's funny. In high school, where I went to high school, there was a like life center right next to it. And that's where my dad actually like is part-time works there, like oversees everything. And he started to play with his boss and they like they ended up being really good. And I would always be like, oh, I can beat my dad and everything. Let me start playing it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I lost. I didn't like that. So I started like to really try to play and get good. And I got to the point where I could either like, I could really compete with him. And it ended up being one of those things where me and him would go play a couple tournaments just to have fun. And like ever since then, it's just, I've always enjoyed the game ever since that.
How old were you when you started?
15,
16. 15. So playing competitive events.
A couple, yeah.
Have you done it? You probably haven't done it, or have you done it since you got drafted, or probably not anymore?
No, I haven't yet. I haven't this past offseason. I just took time off, but probably next offseason I'll probably try to do something with it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Do they have a lot of courts around in Texas?
Oh my, yes. There's a place that I want to say that has like 15 or 16 courts, like all around. Like it's a built for tennis, but they've also built pickleball courts inside the tennis courts as well. And it's massive.
That's pretty cool. I like that. I like that. That's gotta be a lot of fun. So we're about 2 months in, a little less than 2 months into the season. What are some goals for you that you have for yourself over the remaining, 100 or so games?
Every save opportunity, I want to make sure I complete it just because I'm put in that position for a reason. I want to continue to make that and continue to win games like that as well.
Mick Abel, of course, Philly's first-round pick in 2020, had the COVID year, so he didn't debut until 2021. And Clearwater threw about 40 innings for them, and that had a great year, mostly with the Blue Claws. And then at the end of August or the beginning of August, he was promoted to Double-A Reading with Andrew Painter, and they finished the year together up there. Consensus number two prospect in the system behind Painter and Mick from the Pacific Northwest, and big, tall, strong right-hander. And I said to him, I thought you were going to put as your favorite pitcher to watch as Felix Hernandez from up there. But now he said Max Scherzer, so he talks to us about that. And then collecting baseball cards with his dad, and now, of course, he can get some a lot of them, Mick Abel cards, and soon there'll be Mick Abel Phillies cards, too.
I feel like it's ever, man, middle school, I've always really, since the first time I watched him on TV, I really admire his mentality on the mound, and, I really admire his durability, just everything about him, and it's something that his mechanics aren't something that I try to emulate, but just the whole mentality and his whole kind of process of things on the mound. Like
he's a bulldog.
Yeah, exactly. He's a bulldog. I was just about to say that. I'm like, it's something I've always looked up to, and I don't know. And even now, we have some guys that have been around him down in Florida in workouts and stuff like that. And they speak very highly of just how process oriented he is and how routine oriented he is. And it makes me respect him all that more. So yeah, I mean, without his success, I'd still admire him. Even with the success, it makes it all that way cooler to have him as a favorite pitcher.
So before we hit record, we were talking briefly about the baseball card collecting that goes on in the Abel household. How long is that? How long has that been going on? And I guess now you got some, I know there are some Mick Abel cards floating around too, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, my dad's been doing it for a lot longer than I have, like longer than I've been alive. he started out in college and, he's just kind of kept going since. I know he took a little bit of a break when my brother and I were growing up, just because, I mean, he didn't really have much time to, you know, always go to the card shop and always just be doing the little hobby. But this last summer a little bit, and then last, like this past fall, this off season, kind of relit the flame. We started opening Bowman Draft 2021 and Tops Heritage. And then this, like, kind of new year, we started opening Top Series 1 and Top Heritage 2022. And oh my gosh, like, it's kind of pretty much surrounded my entire off days. Like this.
Oh,
past,
really?
Yeah, this last Monday, I had some shipped to the clubhouse, some Bowman 2022, and got to open that. And I can't wait to get my hands on some hobby boxes of those, because I just got the blasters and the blaster packs from Walmart, and like they won't always have the best stuff in them, but I got some Simone Muziatis out of that. I got some Joshua Garcias. I got a Logan Cerny, but he's with the Astros now. And then I got a Vierling rookie card, Luke Williams. We got a couple more big league guys too. So
have you opened one with yourself in it?
I have. And it was the first time I ever did that was after I did some stuff with USA Baseball, and my dad went and got some packs from a hobby shop, and we were opening them, and the first one I pulled was like an autograph patch. It was an autograph card with a insert like jersey patch on it. And I was like freaking out. And then I start opening all the Bowman Draft from last year. And like, it's not my first Bowman, but it was just a different card, different picture and stuff. But, I opened a lot of them, so
that's awesome.
The feeling never gets old, though. It's so sick.
I'm sure it was even cooler for your dad.
Yeah, he's probably got the best collection of my cards. I know that for a fact. So,
what's your dad's first name?
Neil.
Has he been able to come east and see you yet so far this year?
Yeah, he came. He came for the first three game set against Aberdeen, and then he went to Brooklyn as well. So, nice. Yeah.
And I don't want to keep you all day here, but I do appreciate a few minutes. Last thing I wanted to ask you about was Andrew Painter, because obviously he's had a tremendous start to his year, and you know, you guys are going to be linked as you move up the ladder here, you know, to back-to-back first round picks, big, tall, strong, hard throwing, right-handed pitchers. Have you gotten a chance to kind of, I'm sure you followed a little bit at least. What he's done this year, and you know, how, when did you first meet him, and what's your relationship like with Andrew Painter?
I did my rehab last year in Clearwater, and I met him the first day that I started my rehab, because I was in the Carpenter Complex locker room instead of the Clearwater locker room.
Right.
And from the start, it was like, all right, this guy's awesome. And like, he's one of my best friends, and he's one of my best friends here. And got to spend all out of time with him at Instructs last year, and then spring training this year. And to see him having this sort of success, I couldn't be happier for him, because like, obviously it's kind of his first, like it's his first full season assignment. Sure. And like, I had the aspirations to have his numbers last year, and to see him blooming, and to see him growing, and even though he's dominating every start, he's growing and he's learning every single time he goes out. And like, I'll talk to him, like I'll text him after each start, and like, I won't go through too much stuff with it, like about the start, but I'll just be like, dude, you're just dominant. And like, it makes me really, really happy to see.
And then our last clip will be from Andrew Schultz, who recovered from Tommy John surgery that he had at the end of 2020
and had a really good year with the Blue Claws. He got going, you know, mid to late June and throws really hard, nasty slider, ends up in Reading. We talked about his improvements over the course of the year, heading into the Tommy John surgery a couple of years ago, what he was most nervous about during the rehab process, and a bit more with Andrew Schultz.
I think I was trying to do a little way too much, trying to be nastier than I needed to be, trying to prove to everybody that I'm still the same guy that I was 2 years ago. And I think I just got a lot more comfortable being out there on the mound and just trusting myself and trusting the stuff that I have and knowing that I can get people out wherever.
So, you know, obviously primarily fastball slider, which of the two pitches did it take longer to get back to 100%?
I would say the slider. The fastball has always felt pretty good. The command of the fastball took a little bit longer, but the slider, I was kind of throwing it slower at the beginning of the year and it was a little loopier. And I've kind of just tightened it up, shortened it up, and I feel like I can throw it hard, and I'm comfortable throwing it hard now, and I feel like I've got a little better command with it, which has really been a difference maker, absolutely.
So when you say tighten it up, what do you mean by that, and then how do you go about doing that?
Yeah, so I was kind of over, like creating it in the back of my mechanics, trying to throw it like behind my head, and it was popping out super big. So I've really just thought keeping tight as possible and throw it way out in front of my body, and even if it only moves, you know, a few inches, but it's closer to 90, I'm a lot more pleased with that versus the big 84 loopers that I was throwing in at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, you know, it's 10 or 12 miles, you know, 9, 10, 11 miles an hour slower than the fastball. The speed is an asset as much as the movement, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. The less time they have to think about which one it is, the better it is.
So do you bring that into the, you know, the quote-unquote lab, like when do you go over the spin rates and all that from your bullpen sessions between outings or even from your game outings?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's been a big thing too with coming back from my injury. I've been kind of just going two outings a week right now, trying to monitor everything. So I've had that time in between to be able to work on stuff, and Bergie's been awesome. We've every single time, at least once to twice in between my outings, I get off the mound and I feel out those pitches and they set up the track, man. I get to look at some of that stuff. So absolutely. We do always checkpoint that stuff. And I think it's important too.
Were you exposed to that kind of data information when you were in college?
So I think like right as I was getting into like the draft and about to leave Tennessee, we were starting it. We had an analytics department of 3-4 people, and it was only growing. They were buying the Hawkeye like we have
at Tennessee.
Lakewood. Yeah. At Tennessee.
Oh,
yeah, so they were doing it, and I know they're still doing it to this day. And I mean, it shows. Their pitchers this year have been incredible.
So, were you always kind of like mathematically inclined? Did you embrace it quickly?
So definitely not at first. I wasn't opposed to it, but I was just like, I don't need to look at that. And I met Albertus Barber, who you remember probably from 2019.
Sure. Yeah,
and he's super into it. Went to Driveline, kind of. That's how he made himself. And he kind of walked me through some things, showed me some stuff. And I was kind of like, dang, like this can be a really helpful tool. Like, why would I ever turn anything away that might give me an extra edge on someone else, you know?
Mm-hmm. So who is a pitcher that you like to model yourself after?
Right now, if we're talking current, somebody I love to watch at least is just Josh Hader. I know that he's lefty, I'm righty, but
yep. He's
just electric, and I love the way he throws and goes about everything. And he's a reliever too, so that's kind of nice. See somebody like that.
Yeah, but you had to smile when the Phillies got him for a couple homers the other day, right?
Yeah,
Veerling got him, and who was it? Veerling and Schwarber?
It might have been – it was one of our S's for sure. It may have been Stott.
Yeah.
It wasn't Stott, but it was one of the S's for sure. We got a few of them.
Oh, it was Boehm.
Boehm, okay.
I think. Well, I'll find it. But as we talk here, so go the other night in Lakewood, you ended up striking out four guys in an inning. I asked you before, had you ever done that? When did you do that once before?
So I honestly was thinking about it after you said it. I think I've probably done it a couple times because I've always kind of thrown hard and had pretty good stuff. So it's not normally, like I said, the catcher's fault, but I normally tend to throw something that's good enough to where the hitter thinks it's a strike, but it's also well out of the zone. So I've definitely done it a couple of times, especially in high school when everybody's kind of swinging at everything.
And it's not easy definitely. To catch a, whenever you were throwing in high school, 86 mile an hour slider in high school. Yeah. It was Alec Bowman.
It was Alec Bowman,
So let's go back. So you get drafted, you were the Blue Claws in 2019, kind of just get your feet wet. You have about 8 or 9 outings. And then 2020 happens. So you got hurt that year. You know, what happened? Did you realize when you threw the pitch what had happened, or did you have to go to the? I mean, you have to go to the doctor. But did you know when? Did you know when you threw it?
I had a pretty good feeling that it. I didn't know exactly what it was, but I knew something wasn't right. So I was actually back in Tennessee, back home at that point. We had left spring training. I was living with Garrett Crochet and I. We were doing our live BPs on like a probably a Friday, Saturday. I couldn't tell you exactly, but just threw a pitch and it didn't feel right. I threw the rest of the outing. And for probably about a week, I tried to keep throwing and see how it felt. And the weekend came around probably exactly a week from the day that I thought I heard it. I couldn't throw the ball 60 feet. And I was like, all right, I got to let somebody know. I just went to the Tennessee medical people actually really helped me out. And they got me into an MRI the next day and found out it was torn and was going to have the surgery. But, you know, that's part of it. I mean, especially baseball now, people throw harder. And that definitely has something to do with it. And, you know, it's part of the game. I feel great now. And I honestly think that rehab process was good for me. I think I got a lot out of it, like learned a lot about myself as a pitcher and as an athlete. So it was definitely a good turn of events for what it was.
What did you learn? How did you kill the time? You know, obviously there's limited stuff that you can do, but how did you learn?
Definitely. So we had an awesome rehab staff when I was down there. I basically did the whole thing in Clearwater, Florida. I spent about a month in Tennessee during the holidays with John Dean, a physical therapist there, but most of the time was spent with Alex Plum, Cesar Ramos, all down there in Clearwater. And it was just awesome. And they both had so much knowledge. I was able to, all the deficiencies that I had, like in my mechanics, my body, we were able to work through them all and basically not unlimited, but a basically unlimited timeline. So it was able to focus on one thing for a month. Like, dang, I feel really comfortable with that. You know, let's stretch it. Let's try to do this now. I'm like, all right, that feels really good. Let's work on this. I was able to kind of build some stability because I've always been a good athlete, like really springy, but I wasn't necessarily the most stable. And I really worked on a lot of that. And I think it helped.
What are your fears while this is all going on? Like, you know, you obviously have a big arm. Yeah. Are you nervous that the velocity is not going to come all the way back? You know, even though
absolutely.
You know, I know in most cases it does, but you never know.
Yeah, you absolutely. And that was a very realistic fear daily. I would wake some days. I would wake up and be like, am I ever going to be good at baseball again? Because, you know, you just don't know, especially before you're throwing again. And you're just working out and, you know, trying to get your arm back to those ranges of motions where you're even healthy enough to throw a baseball. You're just like, I hope it all works out. But once I started throwing, you know, things kind of soothed out and I felt a lot more comfortable. I felt like I knew that, all right, like if I just stick to this process and listen to these guys, like I will, even if I don't throw 102 again, I'm going to be a really good baseball pitcher and able to get people out again. So I just kind of bought into that process.
But you can still get a guy out at 98.
Absolutely.
But 102 is better.
Yeah,
but 102 is better.
Yeah, that is a goal. I want to eventually get back to that velo, but this year I've touched 100 a couple times, but I've been a lot more focused on, like you said, just throwing it to my spots and trusting my pitches that way, not walking as many people like I was at the beginning of the year.
Sure. Do you think your slider is better now than it was in 2019, like when you came in?
I do. I think it was good in 2019, but I think it was really inconsistent. And I think that now I have a much better feel of where to start it for a strike versus where to start it for, like I was throwing the other day, like the put away pitches, kind of that people will wave at, even though they don't look pretty, but they start in the strike zone and they come right out at the end. So I definitely think it's better now.
And that is a wrap. Thanks to everybody that tuned in. Thanks to all the players and coaches that joined us over the course of the year. So since New Year's 2022, we had the following people on. I want to thank every one of them. Mike Morvay, the former Blue Claws groundskeeper, did his farewell with us. in January. We had Logan Ohapi on before the season. Of course, he's now with the Los Angeles Angels. Josh Hendrickson, a pitcher, left-hander, who will be in Redding or Lehigh Valley next year, the Australian. We did two great episodes with Dr. Larry Hogan as part of Black History Month and the Negro League History of Baseball in New Jersey, one on Pop Lloyd, who played for the Atlantic City Bacharach Giants, and one on Negro League Baseball in New Jersey. Blue Claws manager Keith Werman joined us a couple of times, one when he was named manager back in February and one right before the season. Team president Joe Ricciuti, Blue Claws pitcher Ben Brown, of course, now with the Chicago Cubs, Ethan Wilson, Mick Abel, who you heard from here, Casey Martin, Blue Claws shortstop, Jason Ruffcorn, who you heard from here, first baseman Rickson Wingrove, after he had three home runs in his first week with the Blue Claws, Andrew Schultz, Carl Ellison. His episode was really good, too. We couldn't get it into this, but I urge you to go back and listen to that one. Catcher who nearly retired from baseball, went into coaching, but ended up playing independent ball, signed with the Phillies this year, and he got traded to the Blue Jays at some point during the summer. Carlos De La Cruz, who you heard from here. Andrew Baker, you heard from here. Baron Radcliffe, you heard from here. Kendall, and we did a few at the end of after the season was over. Kendall Simmons, Blue Claws infielder. He'll very likely be back with the Blue Claws in the spring. We did a Phillies minor league year in review with Emily Messina of the Reading Fighting Phils and Mike Ventola of the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs. Blue Claws outfielder Marcus Lee Sang. Blue Claws pitcher Brett Schulz, who joined us from the Arizona Fall League. We did a Phillies World Series preview with Tony Graham. That was really cool. A lot of Phillies history stuff in there. Preston Mattingly, the Phillies farm director, director of player development. He joined us at the end of November, right before Thanksgiving, and we went through the system with him. So you will definitely enjoy listening to that one. And then our most recent episode before this was Steve Potter of PhilliesBaseballFan.com, who covers the minor league system top to bottom, but especially so for the younger players who play down in Florida in the Complex League and for Low A Clearwater. And Steve knows everything about every player in the system. I urge you to listen to that episode. We did an hour, and you can read his website too, PhilliesBaseballFan.com. Blue Claws have some ticket packages on sale now, mini plans, Thirsty Thursday Club memberships, Summer Saturday Club memberships, all getting you ready for opening night on Tuesday, April the 11th at Shoretown Ballpark when the Blue Claws take on the Aberdeen Ironbirds. So that will be a lot of fun. Actually, no, sorry. Take on the Greensboro Grasshoppers, the Pirates affiliate. So that'll be a lot of fun. 100 days away from opening night, that's New Year's Day. So obviously your countdown clocks can start, and then we'll be here for, I'm sure we'll do several episodes before the season starts, and then we'll of course broadcast all the home games and a few road games this year as well on blueclaws.com. So we're going to have everything for you coming up. It's been a fun year doing this. Thank you so much for everybody for tuning in, for coming out to the ballpark, for listening to the broadcast, for watching the video on and the feed on MILB.TV, for following the team on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, whatever. It's appreciated so much. For buying a Blue Claws t-shirt or hat from the team store, we couldn't do this without you guys, and I hope you have a very happy, healthy, and safe new year. Thanks so much for listening. Episode 53 of Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. Happy New Year, everybody. We'll see you at the ballpark on April 11th for opening night at the Jersey Shore.